This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 7:35 in the morning. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of March, and you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, as usual, in about half an hour, we're going to have the breakfast grill. Philip, why don't you tell us what's happening? Because I believe that you will be doing this one.
Yes, I'm speaking to the world's largest condom manufacturer, Carex. So I'm having a chat with MK Go because Carex saw its net profit grew 27 times on year to 2.8 million in its latest earning report, but that was 38% down on quarter. So we're going to deep dive and understand what's driving those choppy numbers and can Carex achieve more consistent profitability and which markets and industries they're penetrating.
So that's going to be quite interesting stuff. So do tune in after the 8 a.m. news bulletin, especially since I think they are moving even to rubber gloves.
Yes. Well, and hand sanitizers.
But in the meantime, I think all of us still very much focus on COVID-19, and the battle against the pandemic is likely to go on for the long term. Given the emergence of variants that mean we could require further vaccine shots to stay protected.
Yeah, so the pharmaceutical industry is looking at COVID vaccine development as an enduring business. And this raises implications about how the vaccine will be paid for and distributed in the future. Currently, most COVID vaccines are purchased by governments in painstaking negotiations with pharma companies under a pandemic pricing environment.
And we have some pharma companies already thinking about bigger profit margins in the future. So last week in its earnings call, Pfizer indicated that it was looking at setting higher prices for its COVID-19 vaccines post-pandemic. Analysts suggest that this could be 3 to 4 times higher than current prices. Presently, Pfizer charges around US$20 per dose, based on public information. So for a better understanding on how COVID-19 vaccines are priced, we speak to Sam Fazeli, who is the Senior Healthcare Analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence. Now, good morning, Sam. Like we said, based on public information, the prices of different vaccines vary. Some of the Chinese vaccines are priced at around US$30, while the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine is as low as $3. Can you help us understand what accounts for the price differentials? Is it down to the technology used?
The different vaccines obviously do use different technologies, but I suspect that the actual technologies used don't necessarily impact the comparative costs of manufacturing them. I don't think there is a massive difference in the cost of goods side or gross margin of these vaccines between them. Not massive. I don't actually know what methodology or what approach the Chinese manufacturers took in terms of the pricing. But I can tell you that even in Europe, there is a pretty wide spread of pricing calculations. If you look at, there are two companies that are offering their vaccines at cost. So you look at some of the imputed pricing for vaccines from AstraZeneca, and you're at something like $1.60 or $2 for the European Union and Gavi and CEPI, and you know about $4 or $4.80. These are all imputed. Obviously, we don't know the actual prices for the AstraZeneca vaccine. For Johnson & Johnson, it calculates to somewhere around the $10 or $5. And these are, of course, vaccines that are being sold at cost. And then you go to the other extreme where you have Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna. I don't want to call it extreme because obviously we're not dealing with hundreds of dollars there, but you're in the range of $15 to $20 to $25 a dose.
So how have different pharma companies approached pricing for COVID vaccines during the pandemic? Are all of them operating on a not-for-profit basis?
No, absolutely not. So the only two that have said they're going to be selling them at cost to everybody during the pandemic are AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson. I think the vaccine doses from Novavax are probably going to be obviously given at a much lower price to the humanitarian organizations who are buying vaccines for the less developed countries. But Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna are both making a profit on their vaccines, even during the pandemic. Just for reference, AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson have both said that they will be charging, they would not be making a profit during the pandemic. And of course, what the definition of when the pandemic is over is open to interpretation, and neither company have really given a steer as to at what point the price of their vaccines will go up. So so that they will be starting to make a profit.
And Sam, governments are largely the ones negotiating and bearing the cost for vaccines at the moment. So do you expect prices to go up post-pandemic when the procurement shifts to the private sector?
Yeah, I don't think they'll necessarily go up that much because at the end of the day, I mean, obviously it all depends on volume. I think if you look at the companies that are actually making a profit today, so their doses are coming in at the $20, $25 a dose max. And you've obviously mentioned the Chinese companies with their calculations. What you have to understand, of course, is that you know, these are likely to go up when you're not in the world that requires 2 billion, 3 billion doses. But if that continues to be the case, I don't expect those prices to go up much more. If we end up in a world that only needs a million or 2 million or 3 million doses per year, then, of course, I think these could become $100, $200 vaccines. But there's been no discussion or comments on that. I don't expect the prices to change significantly when it comes to new variant vaccines, unless you have a vaccine that's got two or three variants in the same shot. So that's an aspect that we have to consider.
So Sam, there is a debate going on that in order to make vaccines more accessible, intellectual property rules should be relaxed to allow more countries or companies to create their own supply of vaccines. Do you agree with this view?
Yeah, so I've been thinking a lot about this. I don't think IP is an issue here. If you think about, I'll give you an example. AstraZeneca has manufacturing in the UK and manufacturing in Netherlands that they are helping with and working on. And the yield of vaccine in the Netherlands is lower than that in the UK, which has been one of the, at least one of the key drivers of the problem in terms of delivering doses to the European Union. So what that tells you is that even when the company is directly involved and doing the tech transfer, you've got a situation where the manufacturing suite that they're using is incapable of manufacturing the vaccine at a level of production that's similar to elsewhere. So suppose you made the patents about how to manufacture the vaccine available. If you didn't do the meaningful technology transfer and then helped continue to deliver expertise to help manufacture, know-how is what's needed here, not patents. The patents are one thing, but I bet you if somebody had the recipe of how to make an mRNA vaccine, they will not necessarily be able to get to a point of making sufficient doses without the help of the companies directly. So the conversation comes down to transfer of technology and know-how. And then, of course, the question ends up being, why should a company spend enormous amounts of time transferring technology somewhere and not just manufacture it themselves? What value does it create? And then, of course, as soon as you've done that, then who's got the liability if the vaccine has a problem?
So how then should we address the issue that we are facing now of the inequitable distribution of vaccines between the developed and developing countries?
Yeah, what we need are the countries who have ordered millions of doses, more than they require, to think about how they're going to implement that and what are they going to use it for. So when you have Canada, for example, that on paper has ordered 9 doses per capita, or whatever the number is exactly, is it 8 or 10, but it's the largest number. When you have the European Union, which on paper has more doses that's required per capita, and then, of course, they start having conversations about, well, we don't know if we like the AstraZeneca vaccine and creating a negative vibe around that vaccine. You know, those countries should pledge their vaccines at cost or at no cost to the humanitarian bodies that are providing vaccine for the rest of the world. And I think we need much more focus on Gavi and CEPI to try and get doses equitably available to the rest of the world. Whether that will happen or not, time will tell. But I'm optimistic that everybody will realize that if you cannot vaccinate the entire world, you cannot go back to a normal world.
Thank you for your time. That was Sam Fazeli, Senior Healthcare Analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, with the very important point that unless you vaccinate everyone, you cannot get back to the normal world. And that is really, really true. No one must be left behind. We have to create herd immunity, not just in your own country, but globally. And I think the point, you know, there's lots of debates about what's equitable, what's not equitable in terms of between developing and developed countries, vaccine nationalism. But clearly, okay, fine, you vaccinate everyone in your country, but if you don't vaccinate the rest of the world, it's back to square one again.
I just want to talk about the cost side, because he mentioned very clearly that the only two selling at cost are AstraZeneca and J&J. And what is interesting is the distribution for those two vaccines is also quite low.
Yeah.
And that's where they get the most publicity from, because it's the highest demand vaccines, the AstraZeneca and J&J. Whereas the Pfizer is relatively run at a profit, but it has also extreme high distribution cost.
Yeah, because it needs minus 70 degrees Absolutely. Celsius, right, for storage. But we are asking this morning on our BFM tweet, should there be a cap on how much drug makers should profit from COVID-19 vaccines? And there were four choices. Yes, for affordability, and 56% said chose that. Yes, for fairness, 23%. And actually, surprisingly, 13.5% said no, it stifles R&D, and while 7% weren't sure. But do let us know, because this poll is still going to be running for another hour or so. But up next, we'll be speaking to Datuk Sri Alexander Natalingki, Minister of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs and Gabungan Parti Sarawak Secretary General on Sarawak. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.